So I'd love to be able to say a very warm welcome to the Two Reds Are Better Than One podcast, but actually it's flipping freezing. We're recording this on Tuesday, 24th of October at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm in South Manchester, as always. Ashley's in North Manchester. You're in your office, aren't you, Ash? And it's absolutely bucketing down outside.
Yeah, it's awful.
Flipping horrible, proper Manchester weather. Let's see whether we can build a bit of a rosy glow on the day. Ash, before we invite our guest on today, just tell me because the only ever time I ever talk to you now is when we do these flipping podcasts. How are you? What's going on?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, not bad at all, thank you. I've been on the road for a few weeks now, but it's nice actually to be at home for a couple of weeks. I'm here all this week. And I'm not back on the road till a week on Thursday, which is nice. So yeah, I'm at home for 10 nights, which is good. Really enjoying being at home for a bit. So everything's good here.
It is nice when it happens. And funnily enough, last week was my week at home, and it was the first time I've been home for absolutely ages. And it is quite nice to sleep in your own bed more than every now and then, isn't it? And
it is.
Calm down a bit anyway. So lots going on here business-wise. And what we thought we'd do today, we've got with us Liz Hughes, who is Managing Director of FTA, Frank Taylor Associates. And there aren't many people around who are better placed to actually sit in a hot air balloon about 35,000 feet above dentistry and take a look out of the basket and give us an overview. Liz, how are you? Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Well, I'm in Hertfordshire, and can I just say it's pouring with rain and it's freezing cold here as well. So yeah, I join you in the weather.
It's the flipping United Kingdom for you, isn't it? And Liz, really appreciate you coming on. And
hi, Liz.
And
hello.
And also really, really appreciate you sharing with us your hindsight. For the benefit of our listeners, let's just get a quick potted history of Liz.
Cool. Well, Liz Hughes, I've been the MD of Frank Taylor's for quite a few years now. I joined them back in 2008 on a consultancy basis. So I was going to come and do a couple of days work for them and never left. So here I am all these years later. I've always worked within the dental sector, and my background is business development. I worked in corporate law firms for many years before this. And the last law firm I worked in was a firm called RHW. And yeah. Martin Whiteman, back in 2006, was one of the people who got the great idea about how we could get around the partnership rules on selling an NHS contract. So I've worked around dentistry and in dentistry for quite a while now. And actually, having worked with lots of lawyers and lots of dentists, I think I prefer dentists to lawyers.
Oh, and there we go. On that bombshell, let's move on. By the way, there is one thing I am going to say, which is that, you know, Andy and Chris between them do occupy a considerable part of the stage when it comes to the kind of public persona of FTA. Do they keep you tucked away a lot of the time, or do they let you out much?
No, I do get out quite a lot, but the reality is I think I'm the one who I enjoy doing a different aspect of the work. They love the stage, can I just say? They absolutely adore the stage. Yeah, we were saying the other day, we used to do so many seminars, face-to-face seminars, and we all miss those. And actually, I'm really pleased to see they're coming back in the fore again, because I think we've all gone around in a massive circle. And I enjoy meeting clients. I meet a lot of clients face-to-face, and that's a bit that I really enjoy. And as I say, Chris and Andy just love the stage.
They do.
Agilis come for 2 days and end up staying, you know, how many years is that? 2008 now to 2024. So what made you decide to stay on after 2 days?
Because when I actually joined Frank Taylor's, when I did some consultancy work, was to look at the growth. And at that point, it was just Frank Taylor's was the agent, the broker. And since then, we've put in FTA Finance. I think everyone will know the name David Brewer. I mean, David's been with us for many, many years now. We put FTA Finance in. We also then created FTA Wealth. FTA Mortgages, and Chris, Andy and I set up FTA Law 6-7 years ago, the law firm. And it was just the opportunity of growth, really. And Andy and Chris are really, you know, they're good guys to work with. We've had a blast doing this. It's been really good fun. And I think that makes such a difference. And I've always said, and we really only employ nice people. We've got a lovely environment in the office. Everyone's really supportive. And it's just a great environment to work in. And we like dentists.
Woohoo! Thank you very much. So, let's get down to brass tacks, all right? Because I really, really am interested to see the view from this hot air balloon of yours. Let's just set the scene, all right? You know, anybody who's on this, listening to this podcast, like I said, back end of October 2023, it's been a challenging year financially for many, many people out there in dentistry. And, you know what, we might not be able to cover the whole scope of it, but if we create a kind of a quick list, we've got serious issues around recruitment and retention in the landscape at the moment. We've got serious issues about pay rises in the landscape at the moment. A year ago, the benchmark for staff salaries in dentistry was running at about 17.5% of sales. It's now running at about 25% of sales across most of the people I talk to. Or to put it another way, what that means for employers is that their payroll costs have gone up by about 40% this year, which is a huge, huge increase. And that's before we start thinking about lab bills, material costs, utility bills, energy bills, all the rest of it. It's getting really, really tough to maintain profit margins at the moment. My perception, and I'll happily be put right by you, Liz, on this, is that in the acquisitions market, in the sale and purchase of dental practices, which obviously is a primary function for you, that maybe, just maybe, the deal flow has slowed down a bit. Maybe, just maybe, goodwill values are down a bit on where they were a year ago. So maybe it's a great time to buy, but maybe it's a rubbish time to sell. We've had, of course, the so-called mergers of some of the bigger corporates. Everybody knows who they are and the impact that that's having on the marketplace. And also, in the middle of all of that, we've had what appears to be the return to the acquisitions market of My Dentist after an absence of over 10 years, I think, if I remember rightly. So there's a lot going on out there. What does Liz see from where she sat?
Yeah, there's a huge amount going on, and it's been a really interesting time. And I think I need to take us back to lockdown and the period after lockdown. So we had lockdown, none of us quite knew what to expect, and most principals going back to work had quite an interesting year following lockdown. Obviously, as everyone knows, people who had NHS contracts didn't have to fulfil all the contracts. We saw an awful lot of dentists enjoying the benefits of private, where before historically they'd maybe not been brave enough to do it and seen the opportunity. We were talking to dentists who had probably been at the point when they were ready to sell their practice and go to the market, who then said, actually, I'm having a really good year this year, so I might stop things for a while. And we've always said we don't have a crystal ball. And now when we're talking to people who maybe 2 years later, because everything's been a tougher period, they're saying, actually, I want to go to the market now. Yeah, there's slight adjustment to what values are being attributed. And you can imagine if someone's given an X amount of value for a dental practice sale or any sale, and then 18 months later we're going, actually, we don't think it's worth as much. It's quite a journey for them to go on, because in their head they know the kind of figure that they want. What we've seen during this year, as you mentioned at the beginning, is everything's becoming more expensive. Our buyers are probably for the first time in their lifetime experiencing high interest rates. And I'm of the generation that says, I remember when it was 16 or 17%, so this isn't too bad, really. But they've never experienced this before. So what we definitely saw at the beginning of this year was a hesitancy of our buyers to say, can I afford to buy a practice? Because obviously interest rates have gone up, not just on buying the acquisition, but also most of these guys have got a mortgage, they've got kids maybe in private schools, they've got, as everybody has, faced a cost of living crisis. So we definitely saw a slowdown, and we saw, as I say, it was almost two slowdowns, because we saw guys looking to buy, I'm using the term guys, sorry, you know, associates looking to buy, who were maybe going, hold on a second, because we saw the decision-making process really slow down at the beginning of the year. People were going to look at practices, they were definitely interested, but the period between, yes, I'm interested, and making an actual offer was taking longer. We definitely saw that extended, which is quite unusual. And the other side, we had sellers saying, well, actually, I think I want to sell now. And we're going, okay, well, let's look at it again now, because we all recognise the period after lockdown couldn't be treated as a normal period, you know, yeah. For all the reasons that we know. People were not going on holiday, they were spending money on dentistry. As I say, if you weren't having to fulfill your NHS contract, you had the opportunity to do more private, yada, yada, yada. So we almost had kind of a bit of a perfect storm going on at the beginning of the year. We've never lost. People will always want to sell, people will always want to buy. And I was reading, or I saw a chain yesterday of someone on social media talking about how goodwill's ridiculously high at the moment. The reality is, the goodwill is where it is. The reality is, it's the affordability.
Yeah.
And when we value a practice, one of the things that we do, which historically we didn't do too much of now, but when we value a practice, we also build into our valuation report for the seller what it would cost the average buyer to buy their practice, so that they can see how reasonable or unreasonable it may be for someone to buy a practice, depending on where it is in the country and how much it's going to be. Because it's really important from our point of view that we can let our sellers recognise the market is definitely softer at the moment for all the reasons that we've, you know, alluded to. That maybe the goodwill value is fine, but maybe the multiple will be slightly lower, because we're driven by demand. It's that easy, isn't it? So if I've got people who say, I want to buy this practice, but I can't afford it, then we don't have a greater demand. What is interesting is we haven't lost buyers by any stretch of the imagination, but what we are seeing is a more prudent, conservative approach to, can I afford to buy this practice? So, and we also do the same with a buyer. So if a buyer wants to go and look at a practice and they say, we're really interested, we kind of say, well, if you were the average Joe and you've got to put 20% deposit down, this is what your payments will look like. So you need to build that into your cash flow as well. Because we can't sell something to somebody that they can't afford to buy. But the reality is, we're all driven by, at the end of the day, we value a dental practice, somebody makes an offer. Majority of people get bank funding. They all have to put down 20% deposit down, 10-20% deposit down. They get bank funding. The banks put in an independent valuer to make sure, from the bank's point of view, whatever they're lending, it's safe. So the bank valuers work alongside us. I mean, they're totally independent, but they work alongside us because they've got to say to the bank, yes, it is worth, for example, £1 million. And the positive aspect from our point of view is we don't overvalue. We're very robust in our methodology as to how we value a practice. And 97% of our valuations, when they go to an independent chartered surveyor, come back in line with what we've suggested it is. We all value in the same way. We all value as well on history. So when you talk about how everything is going up, we factor that in, but our value is based on what the practice has produced in the past and then what we think it's going to produce in the future. And the bank valuer is valuing it on behalf of the bank to say, if Joe Bloggs buys this practice, we're confident that if you lend that amount of money, he'll be able to service the loan and survive and create an ongoing business as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a question. While I'm listening to what you're saying, Liz, it actually begs a question that I'm going to ask Ashley, which is that, Ash, you have got absolutely tons of dental associates who are going through your ethical sales communication program. I know that you're doing that all the time and you're doing it all over the country. Do you get in the coffee breaks and in the lunch breaks? Are you conscious that there's associates talking about wanting to buy practices or not, as the case may be? I mean, what's going on?
As I was listening to Liz there, it's interesting. I reckon the last few months, I've had more conversations with associates who wanting to buy practices than I've ever had before,
right,
which is interesting. And in fact, what's interesting is, I mean, we're at half term this week, haven't we? So for most of the UK, it's half term. So quite a lot of people are on holiday, which is probably why I'm at home this week. But when I think in the first week of November, I've actually got three calls set up with clients who have just taken my, maybe in the last 6, 8, 9 months, my ethical selling course, who are in the process of buying or had offers accepted or just about to put an offer in, and they just want calls with us to see how we can help train their whole team on the same philosophies as that we've trained them with on our courses. So, yeah, I would say I've had more conversations in the last few months than I've ever had before. I was actually saying to you, Liz, and this sounds like a really stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. For practice who are sort of thinking of selling their practice, what advice would you give them, or what tips or strategies would you give them to help them get or maximize the best price for their practice? So I suppose the reason I'm asking this is, if a dental practice, say, has, you know, a couple of thousand people on a dental membership plan, is that going to help the owner get a better price for their practice? So just share me your thoughts. Let's say I came to you and I was thinking of selling in a year's time. What ideas, what thoughts would you have for me to help me maximize the price of my practice?
Yeah, that was really quite interesting. We an interesting point, might not be relevant, but interesting to me, is I used to talk to people when they were 58 about selling their practice. And pre-COVID, it came down to about 52. And it's still around 52. But we try and talk to people 2 or 3 years, really, in reality, before they're ready to sell, to give them chance, if they need to actually look at the way the practice is run and how can they improve the value of the practice. Some people don't. Some people just say, actually, I'm fed up, I'm done, I want to sell my practice now. And obviously that has no impact. So if someone says, I'm 18 months, 2 years off, what can we do? So we'll put a value on it now and say, if you did X, Y, and Z, you know, the usual stuff that we all talk about. What is interesting about capitation schemes is during lockdown, we did not have one single practice that we were working with that lost any patients from a capitation scheme. A few people suspended their payments, but none. And in reality, most of our principals, when they went back after lockdown, said any new patients got to sign onto a scheme. Now, if we roll the clock back a few years, the banks didn't used to like capitation schemes. They were very nervous about them. They would put a penalty against them almost in case there was going to be things like supervised neglect or that kind of stuff. And that's not seen at all anymore. The banks like a capitation scheme because they can see a serviceability of a loan. So if you've got people on a patient's plan, you know you've got income coming in every month, and the bank said, that's great. They almost view it as they would have done an NHS contract and still do. And I know, because I talk to the guys at the plans, you know, everyone knows that there's a general feeling of misery around the NHS contract. So people are looking to convert. So a capitation scheme is definitely a way forward. It gives you a guaranteed income and the banks like it. And it's really quite interesting because we've spoken to a lot of people who've talked about getting rid of their contract. In reality, a lot of people don't get rid of their contracts. We've seen quite a few make decisions where there's been small contracts at the end of the day. Because no matter what we all talk and think about the NHS contract, a part of me says, actually, now's quite a good time to buy a practice with an NHS contract, because I think it can only get better. It's not going to get any worse. And we're all looking at the way with the flexible UDAs, how that's going to impact practices as well. So a capitation scheme is definitely, and has been for a fair few years, but certainly since lockdown, become more and more an added value on the sale.
And do you think, Liz, that what's going to happen now is that because the as you say, the misery of the NHS has become so deep, do you think now that we're suddenly going to see higher UDA values being thrown around the marketplace and that that makes the whole proposition much more attractive for a purchaser?
I think the interesting way forward is where we're looking at the flexibility on the UDAs. I think that's a very positive thing. I think the challenge that we have, and you know, there's a paradigm shift, isn't there? We have young dentists coming through who have an aspiration to do private dentistry. They don't want to do NHS work. The biggest change that we have seen is where historically we'd have a big contract, you know, big practice NHS contract would have flown off the shelves. Absolutely. Yeah, this is a no-brainer. They're the ones that everyone's hesitant. A, they're worried mainly about, can I get the people to actually fulfil the contract? I've got several practice owners who have gone back to work to fulfil the NHS contract because their associates are saying, I won't do it, I'm just going to do the private work. So that's the biggest challenge. And also, there's such a negativity about doing the NHS work. For all the reasons that we all know about, but probably the most popular practice that we continue to sell will be one with an element of NHS dentistry. Not a huge, not 70%, but you know, anything 30-40% is still a big winner for a lot of people because they can see the contract can be fulfilled. And as I say, yeah, I don't have a crystal ball, but I can't see what else they can do with the NHS contract apart from improve it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about recruitment in a little bit more detail. Am I right in thinking that as some of the larger corporates consolidate, that there's going to be a lot of middle management people suddenly appearing in the job market?
Who knows is the answer to that one. I honestly can't comment on the middle management within the corporates, but I imagine that there would be, but I honestly don't know. I think what is interesting on the recruitment side is, and I think it's as Ashley said, we've not lost interest of associates wanting to be practice owners. We've not lost the passion of associates wanting to build their own business. And what we have seen, which I am Mrs. Prudent, honestly, I am prudent beyond belief, is a realization of the associates buying is that actually the guys selling probably don't have a loan, probably haven't had a loan for quite a while, and they're going to be borrowing big bucks to buy a practice, and they might end up for a year or longer earning less than what they've been earning historically as an associate. And that is quite a, you know, how's that going to work and feel for them? That's quite interesting.
Yeah, and it underlines why they need your help, Ashley, because the reality is that they suddenly end up with the keys to a property and a practice and a business and a blooming great big loan that they need to repay. So all of a sudden, everybody's got to be on point in terms of communication skills, haven't they?
Do you think, actually, just thinking out loud this, do you think people who are buying practices like associates, you think they really do this due diligence, or do they just go in, you know, with the heart? What do you think,
Liz?
Well, historically, can I say, if I said to an associate, why do you want to buy a practice? It would be because their friends have a practice and they won't have a practice because their mates have got a practice, which to me was always that's a terrible reason to buy a business. I think what we're seeing is they're more educated. I think there's more of an awareness. You know, they do benefit from the industry itself. I think we offer, if you look across the dental sector now, there is such a high quality level of providers like yourselves that will actually go out and talk to people and educate them. And I think the arrogance of I can just buy a practice has been tempered down. I mean, I've only ever been involved in two practice sales where there's been a bankruptcy, and on both occasions it's been property portfolios that have caused the issue, not the running of a dental practice. And I think there's the generation coming through to buy, as I say, I just feel they're far more educated and they are surrounded by more opportunities to learn and grow and develop their own abilities. Maybe they probably don't see it as a business owner, but just working with people. I mean, I always say HR employment is probably one of the biggest headaches. When I talk to principals who say, I've just had enough, I need to sell, one of the demotivators is normally there's, if you delve into it, the backstory will be there's an issue in the practice that probably isn't clinical.
Yeah. So you keep on telling us that you don't have a crystal ball.
No.
But if you did, mm-hmm. how do you see the next 12 months panning out?
Great question.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've definitely seen at the beginning of the year, everything went, as I say, we just went into slow. I say buyers were making fair offers. The corporates had all gone away to sort of do a bit of like regrouping. Let's see what's going on. Bupa was getting rid of some of their practices. We'd worked with my dentist on sort of looking at their portfolio and finding their portfolio because their desire was to change what they had and go back into the acquisition market, as you saw. Frank Taylor's, I always say that, you know, we've never been in bed with the corporates. We've had a few sleepovers, but we've never actually been in bed with them on a full-time basis. So that's my way of describing it. So whilst we have sold to corporates, we've always sold, and our interest is in the independent private, you know, practice owners, the guys of 2, 3 surgery, 4 surgery practices. It's just not been our forte to work with the big corporates. And that's been a saving grace for us because that market has continued. When I look at pharmacy, and I've always said that dentistry kind of follows pharmacy 5-10 years down the line, it's been a really interesting year in pharmacy where Lloyds have got rid of all their pharmacy practices. The corporates within the pharmacy market have completely appeared to me to have lost their way, and the pharmacy market is now very much back in the independent world. So will we follow that route? I don't know. It's an interesting time, and you probably are better off talking to some of the other brokers who are very much corporate driven to get their real take on what's going on within the corporate market. What I always find really interesting is whilst we have never sold a huge amount to corporates, we do sell quite a few for corporates when they do decide to sell their practices off, because we've got the independent buyers, you know, the small buyers out there.
So in the next year, will it be a good time to sell and will it be a good time to buy?
Two things. I do think we have a softer market. There's no two ways about it. I think it's a good time to buy because our sellers are, probably the first time in a long time, the sellers can't just sit back and say, put my practice on the market and I'll sell it. I personally still believe it's a good time to buy a practice which has an NHS element because I can only see that improving. The biggest challenge that I do think we have is, as I say, the attitude of the generation of associates coming through. A, don't want to work 5 days a week. And that's not just in dentistry. That's, you know, across the board, I think.
Yep.
And also the fact that part of me says we need to sort of... NHS dentistry is here to stay. And there is a need for NHS dentistry. So what is it about NHS dentistry that makes associates not want to do it? And that's the I think that's a bigger question than let's put another pound on a UDA rate.
Yep. Okay.
It's interesting what you just said there, isn't it? That associates don't want to work 5 days a week. Did you sense that as well, Chris, that people just want to work a lot less than they used to years ago?
The phrase, I'm reducing my days, is one that has appeared on numerous occasions throughout the year and is still there. Five days is becoming four. 4 days is becoming three. 3 days even becoming two. And I think it goes back to, you know, Liz started at lockdown, and I think we need to go back to lockdown and just remind ourselves of the fact that that did reset a lot of
absolutely
core values. Yeah,
I think that I think the paradigm shift came 5 years earlier than it probably would have done because of lockdown. But even we as an organization, we provide all our team work a 9 day fortnight, provided the business allows it. So they get 1 day off every 10 days on top of their annual leave to do their own thing. Because we came after lockdown with a generation that was saying, I don't know how I feel about this. You know, my feelings are really important. I want to be able to. And I talk to young associates all the time who say, I want to be a dentist, but I also want to be an artisan baker, or I want to do a floristry 2 days a week. And am I the generation that says, no, you go to work and you work 5 days a week, and even if you're poorly, you still go to work? I'm the elder generation now. I mean, I'm in the wrong place.
I agree with you, Liz. And another example of that, I was down in London for a meeting a couple of weeks ago now. I can't remember, 2-3 weeks ago now. And I kind of got myself out of my hotel on Friday morning. And I'd actually chosen to do the half-hour walk to the venue for the meeting. And the meeting didn't start till 10 o'clock. I left my hotel at about 9 o'clock, plenty of spare time. Where was everybody? And it's like it was like, have I missed something? That the streets weren't crowded, and the city was relatively quiet. And of course, me in my parochial stupidity, living up here in the northwest of England, had forgotten the fact that there's a lot of people now that just aren't commuting into London anymore in order to work, either at all or on certain days of the week. And of course, we've seen that manifest itself in, you know, big tech organizations moving out of central London because they just don't have the need for the premises anymore. So that's kind of like a macro version of what I think is going on all over the country, which is, as we say, people are resetting the clock in terms of the lifestyle. And so actually, as a practice owner, you've got to surf with that wave and you've got to say, okay, maybe you've got to rethink the way that you hire self-employed clinicians in order to actually accommodate their lifestyle requirements. And maybe full-time self-employed is the rarity going forward.
You know? Yeah, and you're just about really to work good. 7 days a week. You're about to do a 7 day week, Chris.
Well, I'm like, you know, I'm older than Liz or you, but I think we're all pretty much from the same generation where we do work 5 days a week and seven if necessary. And as you said, you know, if you wake up with a cold or toothache or a gammy leg, you just get up and go to work. Let's not get on that soapbox, shall we?
No, no.
Or else we'll have all the youngsters switching off very, very quickly indeed. So generally speaking, Liz. Let's kind of move this to a nice conclusion, which is that we can be cautiously optimistic that 2024 is a year in which opportunity will knock, first of all, for people who want to sell their practices, and secondly, for people who want to buy them. That we're beginning to see, I think, coming out of a J curve and starting to slowly but surely get into some upward motion again. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, that is also driven by the fact that principals, current owners, are having to be realistic. And as I say, when we build into our conversations about affordability, it's really important that. As I say, well, after lockdown, we did. Everyone was like, "This is amazing." I wanted to sell my practice, but we're making so much money. Why do I want to sell my practice? This is crazy. And the realism has moved in that says, "Hold on a second. We are where we are with the interest rates. They're not going to go anywhere else. We have the associate. The market is more settled with the fact that there is a higher interest rate. So." As I say, we've got people going, actually, I still want to fulfill my dream, because the majority of our guys who want to buy, their aspiration is to be a practice owner. And I love it when they say, when I own a practice, I'm going to do it differently. And then 6 months later, I say, how's it going? They go, oh, it's tough, this, isn't it? It's really tough being a practice owner. And it's like, yeah, but that's what they wanted to do. So I'm optimistic because I've always got people who want to sell and I've always got people who want to buy. And the bit in the middle is the bit that we work really hard to get right, because there is no point in putting a ridiculous value on something if no one's going to buy it.
Yeah, well said. All right. Liz, thank you. If people want some further advice from anybody at Frank Taylors, what's their first action?
They should. They can go onto our website. There's a link on our website. But honestly, I love talking. So if anybody wants to give me a call, they are more than welcome. And I, like you, I'm more than happy to take calls outside of clinical hours. I have probably more of my conversations early morning, and my cutoff is 7 o'clock, because actually that's supper and a glass of wine, isn't it? But anything before that,
is that 7 o'clock in the morning, Liz?
could be, depends where we know. Actually, 7 o'clock in the evening.
All right, thank you, Liz. I really appreciate it. And yeah, do you know what's nice about this conversation is that at the end of it, I actually feel optimistic and. What could be wrong with that? And, I think that all three of us would agree from our different viewpoints that 2024, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. And I know there's going to be a lot going on geopolitically. Is that the word we use nowadays? And there's going to be a lot going on in terms of elections at home and abroad as well. It's a mad, mad world, as we know. But I think that anybody in the business of dentistry has got every reason to show up in 2024 to join in and to see where we end up. So thank you, Liz, for sharing your insights with us.
I've really enjoyed it. And can I just say, I think the biggest change in dentistry for me is the fact that, exclude the clinical work, that we have the opportunity for, you know, young dentists, old, any age dentists, to be able to look at what they know, and they can develop and build because they're surrounded by people that actually, we understand not the clinical but the business side of dentistry, and I think everyone is benefiting from that now.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Liz. Ash, you've got 10 days at home now, have you?
I have. Yeah, right. I'm actually November's looking manic. I think I'm actually delivering about 17 programs or webinars in November, so it's looking a bit daft. So if it does start raining, my intention is to get out and do a couple of hours on my bike here and there. So that's the plan. Yeah. So you're off to the airport now.
I'm leaving for the airport in about an hour. The rest of this week, I will be starting off in Dublin and finishing off in Belfast. So three and a half days.
Great week.
Looking forward to it very much. Liz, do you think we should perhaps rename this Three Workaholics Are Better Than One?
Just love it.
All right. Thank you once again for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Great pleasure. And
cheers, Liz.
Thank you also, Ash. No doubt we shall pass like ships in the night, as we always do. Take care.
I do it very quietly. You don't even see me.
All right. Thanks for now. Cheers.
Bye-bye.